Chapter 2. "Heads up!" I called out, and we all dashed several feet away from the tree before we heard the branch smash into the ground with an echoing crunch of wood and leaves. My heart was pounding in my chest from the pure adrenaline, but a quick survey of my crew told me that we were all accounted for, safe and well. Then, once we saw the coast was clear, we meandered back over to our original spot. "Maybe be more careful next time," I suggested to Lezan and Adir. "That was a little too close for my tastes."
"There shouldn't be a next time, Ben,"
Nadir chuckled from above.
"That little trick we used should have this sap flowing like water in no time at all."
"That's what I like to hear," I mused as I returned back to the fallen branch. I drew my dagger as the two Kunag women crawled back down the tree. Then I got down on one knee and hacked away at the stem of the branch's leaf. It came away without much effort, and soon the entire thin, waxy stem popped off into my hand. Even though it was nothing more than an inch-thick leaf, the damn thing felt like it weighed 50 pounds. So I tossed it onto the ground and began to plan out my next move.
"What are you doing, Dad?"
Arik questioned as he came over to my side. "I'm gonna show you guys how to make a backpack out of leaves," I answered with a smile on my face. "It might not sound very secure, but if we lattice the strips thick enough, it'll probably allow us to carry the sap without much hassle."
"A bag out of leaves?"
Sela frowned and sounded skeptical.
"Those things are pretty firm, Ben. How can you get it to keep its shape?"
"By cutting them into long, thin strips and then tying them together," I explained as I began my first slice. "Now, who wants to help me?" Arik was the first one to draw his sword and jump onto the task, and the rest drew their daggers and followed shortly after. We worked at cutting the giant leaf into a series of long, thin strips, and then laid them out for later. In order to make enough for everybody, we had to have Lezan and Nadir climb back up and knock down a few more branches. However, after about half an hour of work, we turned four of the leaves into the strips we needed for the makeshift backpack. Next, I took the stems of the leaves, cut off a few strips to act as straps, and then formed the rest of it into a circle that I tied off at the end. Once we had the circular stem to act as a firm base, I started to show the rest of the crew how to lattice the strips of greenery like they were making a basket. I reaffirmed the weave needed to be pretty much airtight to keep the sap from dripping out, and then I showed everyone how to attach the bag to the stem. I wrapped the top of the bag over the edge of the circular base, tied it off, and then grabbed a few more strips from the pile. I used those strips as a final reinforcement, and I ran them over the top of the stem and then down through the cracks in the second row of lattices. Finally, when the bag itself was complete, I used the two smaller bits of stem to form two straps on its front. When all was said and done, we had 5 makeshift backpacks that could carry at least a gallon of materials each.
"Wow, Ben,"
Elzara gasped.
"How did you learn how to do all this?"
"You'd be surprised what the Coast Guard teaches you," I winked at the blue-winged morpho. "Well, that and the fact that I watched a lot of survivalist videos on YouTube."
"YouTube?"
The morpho woman quirked her head to the side.
"Is that some sort of knowledge keeper back in your world?"
"You could say that," I admitted with a smile. "YouTube has taught me so many things over the years that I wouldn't have known otherwise." Now that the backpacks had been created, we threw them over our shoulders and then headed deeper into the forest to find a colossi tree. We wandered around the jungle for nearly an hour before the morpho women finally stopped in their places and pointed ahead.
"There,"
Dalwin noted.
"That would be your colossi tree."
"Damn," I whistled as I took it all in. "You weren't kidding when you said this thing was huge." The tree was so large it probably would have dwarfed one of the giant sequoias out in California, and I couldn't even see where its height ended as it stretched up out of the canopy above and disappeared into the sunlight. There wasn't much in the way of branches or leaves, so I assumed whatever it had was all the way up at the top, out of my sightline. There was textured brown bark all around the massive plant, with several spots where it looked like the bark had been pulled away at one point or another. That must have been where the morphos had bloodletted the sap out of the tree.
"Just tell us where we need to jump."
Lezan giggled as she prepared her axe.
"Point us in a direction, and we'll gladly get to work."
The sap is mostly concentrated on the west side of the tree.
Ahuara explained.
And you'll be able to tell which side that is, because that's where the borers are located.
Hold on. I quickly perked up. Borers? What the hell are borers?
They're my favorite thing on the island!
Kandara interjected as she twirled her golden braid with her left hand.
They're these cute bugs that look like large moving cucumbers. They're kind of gross if you just look at them, but they're harmless. All they want is to suck up some of that delicious colossi sap.
They must have guts of steel if they can handle something that's basically glue. I chuckled and tried to push the thought of giant slug-like bugs out of my head.
Do they taste good?
Nadir asked somewhat abruptly. All of the morphos gave the Kunag leader a peculiar look.
I wouldn't know,
Dalwin admitted.
I mostly stick to a strict diet of berries and nuts.
Me too,
Kandara agreed.
I'm not opposed to eating the flesh of a living creature, but so many of our creatures here are poisonous, so I don't even take the risk. Either way, please don't eat these guys. They're very friendly.
No promises.
Lazan chuckled, and then she made her way to the base of the tree.
Ready, Nadir? Shouldn't I be the one asking that of you?
Nadir mused as she walked over to Lazan's side.
I'm the leader, after all. Technically, Ben's our leader.
Lazan reminded her.
Even though you're one of his many seconds in command.
Nadir looked like she wanted to respond with something witty, but nothing ever came. Instead, she just shook her head, shifted her weight back and forth on her feet for a second or two, and then leapt up onto the oversized tree. Lazan was right behind her leader, and the two Kunag women climbed up the tree like two squirrels that had just taken a 5-hour energy. Soon, they scurried around to one particular side of the colossi, stopped in place, and then looked down at us from above.
I think we found our bowels,
Lazan announced.
Now, how do you want us to cut these down?
Oh, you don't have to cut the whole tree down,
Ahuara called up to the Kunag women.
Just try to cut deep enough to get a flow of sap running out of the side. Once that happens, we'll try to collect it in our baskets.
Ha ha! Got it!
Nadir cackled.
Now comes the fun part.
We all watched with amusement as Nadir and Lazan took turns slamming their stone axes into the side of the tree. And the two looked like old-timey lumberjacks as they hacked away at the trunk in rapid succession. Bits of the dark brown wood chipped away slowly but surely, until finally, I saw a spittle of syrupy brown liquid spray out from the trunk. I think they just struck gold. I grinned as I watched the sap begin to run down the side of the colossi tree. I ran up as close as I could get to the tree trunk, and then attempted to follow the stream of sap as it slowly rolled down the side. I was moving back and forth and tracking my target like the paddle in Breakout. Until finally the first little bit of the natural glue ran over the brim of the backpack and down into its main compartment. I continued to fill up the bag until it was about 3/4 of the way full, and then I nodded for somebody else to come over and switch out. Halara was the first to comply, and the wild hair morpho dashed over, slammed her bag on the trunk just above mine, and began to take it all in. We continued this process as each backpack filled up. Finally, after a solid hour of filling, we had 5 backpacks full of the gooey, sticky sap that was going to act as our salvation.
How did they do that?
Elzara asked as she stared up wide-eyed at the Kunag women.
I've never even seen so much colossi sap in my life.
Never underestimate the power of sheer brute force, I chuckled. Sometimes, the less sophisticated route can take you very, very far. We all watched as Lazan and Nadir slid back down the side of the colossi tree, and we gave them a brief round of applause when their feet finally hit the ground.
Please, please.
Nadir chuckled and held up her furry hands.
There's no need to thank us. We honestly just wanted to smash something.
It actually makes you feel a million times better,
Lazan added.
You should all try it sometime.
Perhaps when we get some weapons like yours.
Queen Dalwin frowned.
I'm afraid our fan blades would just dull if we smashed them into the tree.
I have a proposition for you,
Nadir announced as she put her arm around the yellow-haired morpho's shoulder.
Once we get back to the Dragonkin Island, I'll teach you how to use these impressive axes. There's actually nothing to it. All you do is kind of point and swing.
There's no technique to your attacks,
Ahuara confirmed with a raised eyebrow.
No form you follow or strategy behind your swings?
Who's got time to learn all that?
Lazan chuckled.
We just start swinging and knitting. You just gotta put your hips, ass, and backs into each smash. It's worked out for us pretty well so far.
The Morpho women all looked mortified at the thoughtless strategy of the Kunag, but Lazan and Nadir were too busy celebrating to notice. All right, guys, I mused. Let's get back to the beach. We need to patch up our ship and then try to get to the Isle of the Dragons before those orcs do something stupid. We all turned and headed back in the direction of the shoreline with our bags of sap in hand. But when we finally arrived at the beach, we didn't stop on the sandy shore. Instead, we all waded out into the briny waters of the ocean, and our boots splashed through the shallows until we came into the presence of the Dragon Queen. Then, the Morphos got to work.
We'll each need a bag of sap,
Ahuara commanded.
We're going to split up, so you'll have to divide up your crew as well.
Jonas decided to go with Kandara, while Sela joined up with the Morpho warrior Halara. Meanwhile, Mira went off with Zarandri, while the two Kunag women and Arik followed Dalwin and Elzara. That just left me and Ahuara. Looks like we're a team by default, I chuckled to the pixie.
What a shame.
She chuckled sarcastically and rolled her eyes.
It also looks like they left us to patch the main leak as well.
Of course they did, I snorted. Leave it to the two leaders to have to do the heavy lifting. Ahuara's eyes went wide at my words, and she quickly looked back and forth to make sure nobody had heard me.
Dalwin is our queen.
The orange-haired Morpho hissed in a whisper.
Please don't say those sorts of things around her, ever.
Okay, I conceded. I just thought...
There's no thinking required.
Ahuara cut me off.
Dalwin is our queen, which makes her our leader. End of story.
Oh, boy. I knew Ahuara acted as the leader of the Morpho tribe while the queen was hibernating, but I didn't realize they had such a strict hierarchy of power. I was definitely going to have to address that later, but right now I needed to focus on the task at hand. All right, I said as I tried to change the subject. What do we need to do here? Ahuara floated up a few feet above the water on her pink wings, and then moved over so she was only a foot or two away from the hole in the boat. Then she looked back over her shoulder and smiled.
Watch and see.
The pixie woman winked. The next thing I knew, Ahuara took a long, deep breath, and then she quickly threw her face forward and exhaled. The second she did so, strings of milky, silk-like material rocketed out onto the hole and began to cover it like a spider's web. Ahuara used her rosy wings to move back and forth across the width of the hole as she sprayed it with her throat silk, and by the time she was done, there was a thin layer of white, stucco-like material over the spot where the damage had occurred. Wow. I whispered to myself as I watched the beautiful butterfly woman work.
There,
Ahuara announced when she was finally done.
Now you just need to apply the sap over this patch. Don't be conservative either. You'll need to slather it on thick if you want it to hold up.
Got it. I pulled the leafy basket off my shoulder, walked over to the spot where she'd just sprayed her throat silk, and then reached into the bag. My hands instantly pushed into the thick, viscous liquid of the colossi tree sap, so I grasped my fist around it and pulled out a huge glob. Thankfully, the stuff had the consistency of honey, so it came out in large clumps that threatened to run down my hand if I wasn't quick enough to apply it. I moved in closer, reached out, and began to slather the sap over the patch in the hull. I used about half the bag to cover the hole, but when I was finally done, I took a step back and admired my work. The sap I'd applied first already seemed like it was hardening as the throat silk and sap reacted to each other. It had a wet glisten to it, but it wasn't runny whatsoever. I knew that soon it would harden completely, and then we'd be able to set sail once more.
There are a few small holes that need patching,
Ahuara noted,
if you have extra sap.
I gave the pink-winged woman a nod before I followed her around and repeated the process on two more much smaller holes. Finally, once those were all patched up, the two of us moved away from the ship to see if we'd completed our task successfully. Not long after, the rest of our crew began to rejoin us.
Well, that looked very easy,
Tyrion admitted as he observed from above.
Easy for you to say,
Gemma scoffed.
You didn't do any of the work.
Melky and I had the most dangerous and difficult job,
the silver-scaled dragon snarked.
We had to stand here and be the lookouts.
Fair enough,
Gemma began, but then her eyes widened.
Did you see anything?
Nothing but a few birds,
Tyrion explained.
And a lot of fish,
Malky added.
How long will it take to dry?
Mira asked nobody in particular.
Not long,
Halara noted.
In our experience, it only takes a few moments. Of course, this is about 10 times the amount we use on our weapons.
But it's not very long, right? I reiterated. We need to be on the way here soon.
I'd predict it'll be done in under a count of 60.
Queen Dolwyn spoke up. Like 60 seconds? I gasped. Or 60 minutes?
I don't know what either of those are.
The yellow-haired Morpho shrugged.
All I know is that it will be sooner rather than later.
Then I say we get up on the boat and prepare to set sail. I called out to all of my crew. I want to shove off the second we get the all clear. Malky, do you want to get down in the water at the back end of the boat so you can push us out of this sandbar when we're ready?
Do I want to stay in the water?
Malky chuckled to himself via our telepathic link.
I'm a water dragon. In fact, I've missed being in the water so much that I'll swim next to the boat the whole way to the Dragon Isles.
And I'll ride on his back,
Eric puffed out his chest proudly. Oh, no you won't, I argued with the boy. Riding a water dragon out into the open sea is way too dangerous. Malky can handle it since he's got it in his DNA, but if we encounter a sea monster or another dangerous storm like we did before, I want you to be here on the deck with us.
But Dad!
My son protested in a high-pitched voice.
Malky can just throw me back up on the deck if we run into danger.
That's too much responsibility for him. I shook my head. He's already got to look out for himself, and I don't want him to have to worry about you too. That's my job, Eric. The young dragonkin threw his arms across his chest and pouted like he was about to throw a fit. My son may have been growing fast, but he was still the equivalent of a 10-year-old right now. So I guess I should have figured he'd be at the age where he'd take issue with authority. I shudder to think how bad it would get when he officially grew into a dragonkin teenager. Still, I was his father and his king, so he didn't have much of a choice. Eric continued to grumble under his breath as he sloshed over to the ship's ladder and prepared to climb up, but he stopped short when he saw the rungs were just out of his reach.
Can Malky at least give me a boost up to the ladder?
My son asked in a tone seething with preteen snark.
Or is that too dangerous, too?
I have a better idea. I chuckled as I walked toward Eric. I'll give you a boost. My son's eyes went wide as he looked back and forth, probably to see who was watching. His entire demeanor turned from snarky to panic the closer I got, and he began to fidget nervously.
That's okay, Dad,
he gasped.
I don't need you to...
Before he could finish his sentence, I reached down, grabbed Eric around the side of his torso, and then lifted him up so he could reach the rungs of the ship's ladder.
Up you go, son,
I said in my most dad-like voice. Eric grabbed the bottom of the ladder, scuttled up a few rungs, and then looked down at me with a face that was as red as a beet.
I could have done that myself,
he argued. Sure, I laughed. Now get up onto the deck before I make a corny dad joke.
Oh, please don't.
Eric buried his face into his hand and sighed.
Please don't.
My son then made his way up the ladder as quickly as he could until his body was over the side of the deck.
Do you really have to embarrass him like that?
Gemma questioned as she came over by my side. No, I snickered. But I wouldn't really be doing my job as a father if I didn't embarrass my kids every once in a while. It kind of goes with the territory.
Our child is going to be in for something else,
the tall Nerolope woman said as she strutted to the ladder.
He's going to have you embarrassing him with your dad jokes, and his best friend will probably be a mischievous, fire-breathing dragon.
I heard that!
Tyrion giggled through our mental link.
I meant for you to hear it,
Gemma reassured the dragon as she looked back over her shoulder. However, I was enthralled by something else that she'd said. Something that made my heart flutter and sent happy pinpricks down my very soul. He? I smiled. You just referred to our child as a he. Gemma froze like a dear woman caught in the headlights. Then she slowly let an awkward smile spread across her face as she let go of the ladder and turned around to face me.
That was supposed to be a surprise.
The auburn-haired Nerolope hung her head and sighed.
I had a dream last night where the goddess Nera told me her child would be a boy. A beautiful, dark-haired boy who will grow up to become one of the most skilled archers the world has ever known. I know you didn't want to know the gender until it was born, but my goddess had other plans.
I stepped forward, placed my hand on Gemma's small baby bump, and then ran my fingers through her soft red hair. I don't care if it's a surprise or not, I promised. As long as it's a healthy child that gets your beautiful personality, I'll be a happy man.
We're having a boy, Ben.
Gemma's face lit up with pure joy. We're having a boy, I repeated, and then I kissed the Nerolope woman passionately. Unfortunately, we couldn't celebrate for too long. There was still much of a journey ahead of us, and we needed to get going. Gemma climbed up the ladder next, and I followed closely behind her. Part of it was to make sure she didn't accidentally fall off, but it was mainly just so I could watch her tight ass sashay back and forth as she climbed. My pants tightened at the sight of her smooth ass cheeks, and if we weren't strapped for time, I would have offered to take her down to the captain's quarters for a bit of celebration festivities. Both of us got up over the side of the deck, and then Mira, Sela, Jonas, and the two Kunag women climbed up after us. Meanwhile, Tyrion and the Morpho women avoided the ladder altogether, and just floated up using their wings.
You know,
Elzara trailed off as she marveled at the different parts of the ship.
This will be the first time I've ever left our island. You're in for a treat,
Halara giggled.
There's so many more strange things out there, according to our old mates. Did you know not all of the trees are as big as the ones on our island? What do you mean?
The innocent blue-haired Morpho asked.
Aren't all trees that size? Nope.
The purple-haired beauty proclaimed with her hands on her hips.
Neither are the creatures of other lands. In fact, I once saw a creature that looked like a hopper, but it was smaller than the palm of my hand. A small hopper?
Elzara gasped.
Our lives would have been much easier if they were all that size. We could just stomp on them and the battle would be over.
Zarandri giggled quietly at her own joke.
On our island, we had small creatures that looked just like your hopper.
The deer noted.
Their backs were the meatiest part, so we'd always have to catch them by the legs and then jump them down before they could wiggle away.
That's nothing, I added with a smile. In my world, the legs of those things were seen as a delicacy. You'd cut them off, cover them with butter and breading, and then fry them up like a clucker bird.
You certainly couldn't do that with a hopper,
Ahuara noted.
Unless you wanted to go into a state of muscle spasms, mouth foaming, and potential death.
We continued talking about the frogs of our various homes for a few more minutes, until Alara finally walked over to the side of the ship. The silver-winged Morpho bent over the edge of the deck to inspect the colossi sap, and then she stood back up and held up her pinky finger to us all.
Ah, what does that mean?
I whispered to Ahuara.
It means the sap is dry and we're ready to leave.
The orange-haired pixie chuckled. So I quickly dashed back to the end of the ship, looked down at Malky, and grinned. All right, Malky, I called down to the copper-scaled water dragon. Once the anchor is up, give us a good shove.
Ready when you are, friend,
the teenage dragon noted. Everyone else, weigh the anchor, I commanded the rest of my crew. Nadir, Lazan, Mira, and Sela all ran over to the large wheel that controlled our anchor and grabbed onto one of the handles. Then they slowly began to walk forward, and the wheel started to crank with their movement. There was a mechanical clinking sound as the giant chain of the anchor was hoisted up into the hull of the boat, and soon the weight that had held us down was gone. The boat rocked gently from the waves that sloshed against its side, but we were still too deeply embedded into the sandbar to move, so I looked down at Malky once again. This time, though, he didn't need instruction, and the water dragon placed his triangular forehead against the back of the ship and then slowly began to push us out to sea.
Let me help you, Malky,
Tyrion offered, and then we saw the small silver dragon swoop down and grab onto the back of the ship with his oversized feet. Now that there were two massive beasts contributing to the effort, the entire boat shifted forward, and the dragon queen began to float away from their figures. I held my breath as I waited for disaster to strike. Even though I trusted the Morphos with my life, I couldn't help but worry the sap would wash away, or that we had missed one of the holes or something like that. However, Relief soon swept over my body when we just floated in place, without much fanfare. All right, guys, I announced with excitement. Drop the sails. Next stop, the Isle of the Dragons. My crew let out a cheer as they all got into position on the ship. The two Kunag women took their places at the front sails of the schooner, while Mira and Sella both took the riggings on either side of the boat. Tyrion softly fluttered over and landed on the crow's nest, while Gemma took on the task of releasing one of the auxiliary sails. As Eric and I walked over to the wheel of the vessel, I realized the Morpho women were all just standing around with confused looks on their faces.
"Should we order them to do something?"
my son asked with a bit too much enthusiasm. "No," I shook my head. "This is their first time on a sailing vessel. Just let them sit back and enjoy it." Once the sails were down, the wind caught us and propelled us back out into the briny ocean. The Morphos all watched longingly as their island grew further and further away on the horizon, and I wondered if this was a bittersweet moment for them. However, I didn't have much time to dwell on my thoughts. Suddenly, there was a massive thud, accompanied by the sound of splashing water and panicked chuffs. Malky's long, lanky frame was now up on the deck, and he was dripping wet from the seawater as he looked around with panic in his dark eyes.
"What's the matter, Malky?"
Eric gasped.
"I feel that you're very worried."
"You'd be worried too if you saw what I just saw,"
the water dragon shuddered. "Malky," I gulped as my heart began to beat like mad. "What did you see?" Before the teenage dragon could answer my question, Elzara let out a small shriek.
"What is that?"
the blue-haired Morpho gasped as she pointed out into the ocean. "Eric, hold the wheel steady," I commanded my son, and he took over as I dashed to the side of the boat.
"What in Cuckoo's name is that thing?"
Ahuara muttered with a mixture of wonder and fear in her voice. About 200 feet away from our ship, the slick skin of a large aquatic creature popped its back out of the water. Soon after, we saw a flat, wide head rise up to greet us, with eyes on either side of its horizontally elongated skull. "Is that a fucking hammerhead?" I pondered aloud. It was definitely bigger than any hammerhead shark I'd ever seen before, nearly the same size as our schooner vessel, and equally as wide. As it got closer to the surface, I noticed that, instead of two side fins and a long tail, it had four equal-sized fins spread out across its body, like the freaking Loch Ness Monster. Even worse, there were large crustacean-looking things attached to its back that were about the size of a Volkswagen Beetle.
"Are those parasites?"
Mira gagged. Suddenly, the creature ducked back underneath the surface, and the dead fish stench around our ship became so thick you could cut it with a knife. I'd seen this sort of behavior in sharks before. It was preparing to attack.